Welcome to the Green Screen of Death. My name is Adrian. I'm here on day, what are we on, five? Day five, Fantastic Fest 2015. Man, it's been crazy. What we're going to do this episode is I'm going to ask a few different people to guest host with me. So it'll be kind of a joint effort because it's tough to get one person to do a full episode. So I'm just going to ask friends to review single movies with me and turn it into a full episode. So, I'm here with my good buddy Jay, Jay Rosenkrantz. Why don't you talk a little bit about yourself? You're a filmmaker, you're a video game enthusiast, you're a bit of everything, right? So why don't you introduce yourself to our listeners and talk about why you love Fantastic Fest. Let's start with that.
Cool, yeah. I'm a writer and a producer and a designer. I live in Austin and love the Alamo Drafthouse. I think it exudes this love for movies that I have not found anywhere else in the world. And so it's a place that feels like home to me, and Fantastic Fest is a celebration of that place. It's a great place to be if you love movies and you love stories. I think every year I could go the year without seeing any movies if I knew that I would have Fantastic Fest, and I would be okay with that. So,
oh, totally.
It just speaks to how great of a time we've been having.
I'm going to put you on the spot real quick here. You're from New York, right?
Yeah.
Oh, can you talk about the differences between New York movie-going experience and Austin movie-going experience? Because you live here now, right? So can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, New York, there's a few good theaters, but for the most part, the theater-going experience is like, you know, multiplex-driven. You get people talking in the theaters. Terrible menu of food. It's just not a great... It's not a great experience. So often in New York, I'd prefer to watch movies at home. Here in Austin, going to the Alamo Drafthouse and the Violet Crown downtown, the movie-going experience is something special. It's something to look forward to. So I actually now prefer to not watch movies at home, and I do most of my movie watching during the year at the Drafthouse.
Oh, cool.
And they've got such a great curation of movies. Like, I saw Aliens on 70mm here this past month. I've seen some just incredible. They had the whole month of September was September devoted to Steven Spielberg films. So they were playing Jaws and Close Encounters and E.T. and Jurassic Park, and it's just a fantastic place to live if you love movies. And it's great. It's the best place that I've found to watch movies in the world.
Oh, totally. It's amazing. I'm jealous of you guys because I always see those cool screenings you guys have, and I'm just like, oh, that's so cool. Nothing like that anywhere else. Okay, so I know the reason why I asked you to do this is because I know you love Asian cinema. I know you love Sion Sono. Love and Peace is playing here, and you watched it. I've seen it. So why don't we get into it? We're going to review Love and Peace. I'll ask you right now to lay down the groundwork for the film, like what it's about, because nobody really knows if they're not here, if they haven't seen it. So what's the basic premise of the film, and what are your first reactions of Love and Peace?
Sure. I think some good context to lay it down is sort of the atmosphere that I entered the theater for this screening for. So firstly, it was up against The Witch, which I heard incredibly good things about and I'm very excited to see. But I had to pick Love and Peace because last year at Fantastic Fest, I actually saw my first Sion Sono movie ever, which was Tokyo Tribe.
Nice.
Kicked my ass.
Yeah.
Saw it both screenings, and a group of us who were just like totally obsessed with that movie assembled and started watching Sono movies one per week. So we started going into this guy's prolific filmography. Every one of his movies that we watched, so different, so unique. He's operating on like, you know, a level that only the most incredible filmmakers that are living operate on. And so we had watched like about 10 of his movies, and then we got to Cold Fish. And Cold Fish is just like a brutal, nihilistic, devastating, bloody sort of, you know, movie that makes you not want to watch. It made us not want to watch any more of his movies.
Oh, really?
We were like, we need to take a break from this guy.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and so I hadn't seen a Sono movie in about 7 months and until this movie. And so I'm assembled with our, you know, five other of our Sono-going group that have been watching these movies. And we were super excited, no idea what to expect. I had heard a little bit that it might be a kaiju movie, but I wasn't really sure.
Yeah.
And the programmer who introduced the movie came in and said that he had brought Love Exposure to Fantastic Fest like 6 years ago.
Oh, that's crazy.
And he was about to say the same thing he had said when he showed Love Exposure, which was, you know, there's good news and there's bad news. The good news is you're about to see the best movie that you'll see at Fantastic Fest. You're about to see the best movie that you're going to see all year.
Oh, nice.
And that's the bad news, too, because every other movie that you see has to follow this. And so immediately I'm hyped out of my mind for what's to come. And what unfolds is probably like one of the most hilarious movies that I've seen in a long time. Definitely the most hilarious movie I've seen here, crying laughing.
Yeah.
But also just like a touching movie.
Oh, yeah.
About a relationship between a boy and his pet.
Yeah.
It's like an idol movie about like the perils of success.
Yeah.
And chasing fame and glory. And the pressures of society to go after that. Yeah. It is a kaiju movie. It's also a Toy Story somehow.
Oh, totally. Yeah, it is.
And it's filled with love and peace. It's got original songs, pop songs that Sono wrote that are really catchy.
Oh, yeah.
And, it's totally positive. It does touch on some dark ideas, but not in a bloody way at all. I don't think there's any like blood at all in the movies.
Not that I remember, no.
Which is maybe like the only movie that I've seen of his that doesn't have any violence for the most part, or at least, you know, treat violence with blood. So it was just like such a joy of an experience to watch, and really emotional, and I'm thinking about seeing it again.
Oh, cool. Festival. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. What'd you think of it?
I loved it. I thought what made it so great is that the main character, he's easy to root for. Like, he's kind of a loser in the beginning.
Big loser.
Big loser. You know, I think all of us have been in that place, maybe still are in that place, that where you're just not happy with life and you just want to turn things around. So he comes up with this ridiculous plan to turn his life around and starts going through the motions. And they're just so ridiculous. And it all starts to happen for him. And it's just so fun to watch that unfold.
Absolutely.
And, you know, he has a pet turtle. His name's Picadon, which... What was that about again, the name? What did it mean again?
I think it comes to represent the atomic bomb, which he didn't know. He didn't know when he named it that.
He just thought it sounded cool.
Yeah, which is one of the themes of the movie, too, though. It's like, don't forget... It comes up often, don't forget the A-bombs.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of what... that he's doing both as like a songwriter in the movie character and also I think like kind of an overall message to like a Japanese and I guess worldwide audience that he was working with in the movie, and it all came together. It was like cosmic series of crazy ideas just thrown into a pot and made to work as if like, you know, he found this story in the water and, you know, it was ready to bloom. You just needed to, like, add some actors. One of the other things that I loved about it that, you know, was, I think, key to the movie is that main actor, his, like, talent for physical comedy and the way he screws up his face to make himself look like a loser and look ostracized and look pathetic, and the way he turns it around when he starts having success and look like, you know, he looks like Kobe Bryant at one point. It's just like, what an incredible performance from that guy. And totally sells the movie.
When you have physical comedy like that, I think that gets to sort of the roots of early cinema when it's silent films and you need really great body language to sell a joke, and I think that's, you know, a big part of the comedy in all his films, really. All the actors are always over the top and just crazy. It really works in this one.
Yep.
How was it to watch with an audience? I didn't watch it with an audience, so how did everybody react here?
Just uproarious laughter. I mean, also just oohing and aahing at the cute animals and in the workshop. That's the other thing. It's a Christmas movie too, somehow.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Yeah. And it's like one of the best Christmas movies, like just instantly, which is, it's such a crazy accomplishment. But the audience was so into it.
Cool. Yeah, that I really enjoyed the aspect with Picadon because it was just so touching, and it was very touching, very moving, and as I said before, so relatable. Like, it was content that I could really connect with. You know, made me think of past pets I had that were like my best friend, you know, in lonely days when I was a teenager and stuff, and thinking that my there's more to just my cat just coming up and snuggling up next to me when I was feeling bad. I was like, you know, it brought me back. I thought it was really sweet.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I've got a dog too that, like, on bad days, you know, you feel like the dog is the only one who understands you.
Oh, totally.
And
yeah.
That's, like, totally put up there on screen, heart on its sleeve, and allows you to kind of tap into that feeling that everybody feels of being alone and not being understood. But it's done in such hilarious comedic fashion.
Oh, yeah.
That it feels good.
Yeah.
Being a part of that.
Yeah, because there's room where, you know, there's a very delicate line between making fun of the character and just treating him like a human being. I think he dances that line, and I loved all of that. I was just all the way into that. So, yeah, so he's done a bunch of movies this year, hasn't he?
Mm-hmm. He's got about, like, 6 movies?
I think so.
Yeah, and we only got one, but you know, that one was enough for me.
Yeah, totally.
I'll see the others, but I'm pretty happy with what we did today.
Cool. So for anybody who's not familiar with Sono Films, because he's not a very, like, mainstream filmmaker for North America, what do you recommend people start with for Sono Films?
I think Why Don't You Play in Hell is probably a really good entry point. Because it's super entertaining and fun, and it's about filmmaking. And if you like that, like, I don't know, if Tokyo Tribe's available, that's great. Yeah. Love Exposure is a must watch. I know you.
That's hardcore.
Yeah,
I need to try it again. It disturbed me quite a bit.
Yeah, it's a tough movie. It's like 4 hours long.
That too. Yeah,
it's one of the only 4-hour movies that I've seen that I want to watch again. And
yeah.
I think, you know, I wouldn't start there, but I would go there if you like what you've seen of his, because you know, he did an amazing horror, like trippy horror movie called Suicide Club.
Oh, okay, yeah, I haven't seen that.
That's fantastic too. Everything he does, it starts off adhering to a genre, and then it just becomes its own genre, which is a Sion Sono film.
Yeah.
And they're full of so much complexity, so many interesting ideas, and he had a career as a poet before he was a filmmaker.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So I think he's like very just naturally understands how to communicate emotion and ideas through sound and visuals.
Yeah.
And so everything that he's trying to profound that he's trying to tell you is sort of woven into an immensely entertaining or interesting package and amplified by the language of cinema.
Oh yeah,
which makes him something special. So yeah, I clearly love
Oh, totally.
I want to meet him. I hope they bring him to Fantastic Fest.
That would be cool.
Yeah, I will throw myself down before him and bow and say, "Master, please
right
teach
on
me."
Yeah, and he is teaching you, right? Like every film, he's constantly. I enjoy filmmakers like that who they could stick to one thing and be successful, but he's not. Like you said, Love and Peace. If you watched, like, Love Exposure and then watch Love and Peace, you'd be like, that's the same guy?
Yeah, but then you start to watch, like, 10 of his films, and you're like, oh, it is the same guy.
Yeah.
Everything he does, he's talking about love and peace in every one of his movies. Love is such an important theme. It's almost, sometimes I feel like it's the only thing that he thinks a movie is worth making about.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I think we better start wrapping it up here pretty soon. Did you have any closing thoughts on Love Exposure?
No, I just wanted to tell everybody that I'll part with May the Force be with you.
Okay, all right, cool. Thanks, man. Oh, where can people find you online? We'll do that last
DC,
thing.
DC Krantz on Twitter, KRANTZ.
All right, thanks, man.
Thank you.
This is Adrian from the Green Screen of Death here on day 8, the final day of Fantastic Fest 2015 edition. We're here to talk about Green Room. I'm here with my good buddy Brad Henderson. He's a Jeremy Saulnier fan. I'm a big Jeremy Saulnier fan. We both saw the film, so we're going to give it to you, like, just sort of the premise of the film. We're going to talk non-spoiler stuff, and I think we're both pretty stoked on Green Room. So, Brad, why don't you introduce yourself and give the premise. What's Green Room all about?
Well, as you said, I'm Brad Henderson.
That's right.
More importantly, let's talk about Green Room. I was super excited to see it because, I mean, of course, I was a big fan of Murder Party back in the day. And when Blue Ruin played at, Fantastic Fest 2013, I really enjoyed that. And then, so when I heard they were doing Green Room, immediately, as soon as I found out Saulnier was doing a new movie, I was super stoked. It was probably my most anticipated, because then it played, at TIFF, and everybody kind of went nuts, and I was like, okay, all right, I'm ready. So yeah, Green Room, it is basically, spoiler-free, a punk band that's kind of on their small little tour gets booked at a club.
Yeah.
And it turns out, they find out that they are skinheads. Yeah. So they decide, they have to get back home anyway, so they have to take any gig they do, for gas money and all that type of shit. So they take the gig, and when they get there, some shit happens, and they are trapped inside of this club for a good portion of the movie. It's very intense. What did you think?
Oh, man. I love the film. I love it so much. Like, the characters, Saulnier has a way of creating these characters in this world where it's easy to get, like, invested in everybody in the film, whether it's a, good guy, bad guy. You just enjoy watching this world unfold. And it sounds crazy to say that because there's some really bad dudes in this movie.
Yeah.
They're at a club. They get stuck there due to some circumstances. And basically, they just have to try to survive. And it's in a very remote area, so they're not going to be able to get help or lose all means of communicating with the outside world.
It's almost borderline survival horror in a way.
Oh, yeah.
Mixed in with like a siege, which is really awesome. But the one thing I truly love about Saulnier is what kind of piggyback on what you said is that he spends time with our characters that we are supposed to love and like, but he also spends a good portion of time with villains, which we see kind of, their motivation and their everyday life. So in a way, we can almost see the balance. We see what our good characters, our heroes, don't see, which is kind of, excruciating because we know kind of what they're going to get into. And that's kind of the sense of dread that the film builds up, is that we see the behind the scenes of this highly organized, I'm pretty sure they're, AB skinheads is kind of what they were going for. If anybody's unfamiliar, AB is the Aryan Brotherhood, who is extremely organized in crime, who are just really, really, really bad dudes. And, it's a very scary thing. And the one thing I really liked about the film was the realism to it. I think from the outside standpoint, if people watch it, they're like, oh, it's skinheads, huh? It's a little bit more than that. There's all types of skinheads, which they kind of mention, and I was really happy in the film, when they talk briefly about the skinheads, Anton Yelchin's character mentioned, he's like, are they sharps? Are they, DMS? Which is like, sharps are like, sharps is skinheads against racial prejudice. Those are the guys that actually attack the bad skinheads.
Yeah.
Because, they're like abolish government, but at the same time, they're against racism. And then you have your, the dark, Doc DMS, which is Doc Martin skinheads.
Okay.
Is another thing, another thing he mentioned, because Doc Martin's like the clothing wear that they have.
Yeah.
But, it's a really, for me, it was a little bit heavier, I think, for some, because back in the day, I was hanging out with this group of guys that were filmmakers and, working on sets with them and everything like that. And then just about a year into it, they're digging these ditches out in this field one time. They went out shooting their guns and stuff like that. I had no idea what these guys stood for or anything about them. like outside of the movie stuff. And they're burying weapons, and I'm like,
huh? Oh, that's freaky.
What are you guys doing? You know, and like, oh, this is from the raid last night. And I'm like, all right, so these guys probably killed somebody, and I found out they were sharps, which is not okay. But it was like, okay, wait a second, but still, you guys are hurting people or killing people, one or the other.
Yeah.
So it's very terrifying, but it's one of those things where they're so organized, and that emulates off the Green Room highly for me, is that they have all their bases covered.
Oh,
so
yeah.
These guys are at such a disadvantage, it's not even funny, which is another thing that's terrifying. And plus, these are kids that are just, you know, all about punk music and have no idea what they're in for
the
rest of the night.
They're just artists looking to play music, get heard, and they've got a grassroots kind of approach to the way they play their music and promote their music. One thing I wanted to comment on, I don't know if you picked up on it or if anybody else did, this is going to sound outrageous, but Jeremy Solner's Skinheads, the world building he had with them, the character building, the background, all the minutia of everything that went into those characters felt a lot like George Miller's Half-Life War Boys to me. Like, I was like,
oh,
they're
yeah.
gross dudes, but they're kind of cool.
Yeah. No, I think that's the beauty of Solner, especially with, you know, Blue Ruin, another, you know, be spoiler free, is that with Blue Ruin, we spent enough time with the villains that we kind of want to hang out with them too. And I think that's the most important part with building a movie and building characters, is that if you have likable villains, you're not dread the time that you spend with them. You that's why people like villains. That's why we like the Joker. You know, that's why that he keeps coming back. That's why everybody's like gung ho about, you know, Dark Knight when it came out.
Yeah.
You know, there was a movie here a couple years ago that played. It was called Sleep Tight. You know, the villain in that is just a terrible piece of shit. But
yeah.
We love watching him. We love watching what he does. We love his interactions. And I think that's a good portion with the Green Room, is that, you know, I mean, Patrick Stewart just is fucking... I don't think we've ever watched a movie where Patrick Stewart is so sinister, where he is just a mean, mean man.
Oh, yeah.
And he controls all of these people, and they are willing to do and die for anything that he says.
Yeah.
Because even though he's not kicking ass, he's the most dangerous and intimidating guy in that movie.
Yeah. And early into the film, we witnessed that sort of "I'll lay down in traffic for you" kind of behavior pattern.
Yeah.
They're willing to die for the guy. And
yeah, and I think that's a big portion why it's so intense too, is because they have this live or die attitude, because they need to prove themselves.
Yeah.
They need to get their red laces. And if anybody pays attention to how Nazis operate, red laces is basically, you know, like a Medal of Honor.
Yeah.
So, you know, anybody that's willing to, you know, step up and do whatever it takes, they're going to do it. And that has to, if they have to die in the process of proving themselves, they will. And that is absolutely terrifying.
Oh,
so,
big time. Now, you've seen his previous two features, Murder Party and Blue Ruin. This one, in a lot of ways, gets back to Murder Party with the violence, the gore, the makeup, all that, the splatteriness of... were you expecting that with Green Room?
No, because I honestly didn't know what to really expect when I sat down, because the only thing that I saw was the clip that was released with the guy explaining about, you know, these are cartridges and all that. And I was like, holy shit, this movie's going to be badass already. You know, because he's saying dialogue that I would write. So anyways, I really didn't know what to expect, because even though Blue Ruin isn't action-packed, it's edge-of-your-seat thrilling.
Yeah.
Like, you're constantly, your heart's beating, and I was hoping that would kind of happen with Green Room, and obviously it did. But it was just, it was kind of relentless.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and even though we're not running around surviving the night like, you know, a fucking Purge or something, it's still just as intense.
Oh, yeah.
So it's just, it's building that sense of dread, that sense of hopelessness.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if I was in this situation, because I think we all can put ourselves in that situation when we see, because I think that's a disadvantage that a lot of movies have, is that we spend so much time with our bigger characters and our heroes. We don't spend enough time with the villains, so yeah. we don't know what they're capable of. Yeah. We just see them bark orders and have guns. We don't get to see how organized they are.
Oh, yeah.
This movie, we go into strict detail of what and how they're going to do it. And the people that we're stuck in the room with, the kids, they have no idea. And I think that is where your heart's beating, is like, how would I get out of this? How are they going to get out of this? Basically, if I'm equivalent to this kid in this room. You know, I'm not an organized crime, you know? So what the hell am I going to do? And I love kind of the punk rock approach that Solner had with it, because our characters are punk rock, but they also have this punk rock thing where it's like, you know what? Fuck it.
Yeah.
We are in this shit and we have to figure it out, and, you know, what the fuck are we going to do?
Yeah.
I think that's what makes that movie flow so well, and it's just so damn intense.
Yeah.
So
I love the choice of punk rock in this, because it feels like he's a punk rock filmmaker. Like, he's saying, here's my film, it's fucking punk rock, goes against the grain, it's not mainstream. It's his own voice, his own message, his own characters.
Even with his cast, like, you know, Anton Yelchin's, you know, obviously been in big movies. I mean, everybody on the planet basically knows who Patrick Stewart is.
Yeah, but Imogen Poots is in it.
Yeah. Yeah, and he just has this, like, you know, everybody's on the same level. Like, the stars, even though, you know, Anton Yelchin's a big part of the film, and so is Patrick Stewart, they're still, like, leveled with everybody else.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not like a Hollywood blockbuster. We spend enough time with everybody. We actually, it's, you know, funny, because we care even about the minor skinheads that are in the movie. We somehow attach ourselves to them.
Oh, yeah.
And you don't get that at all with movies hardly today. It's very often that happens.
Yeah, there were two of the band members, the punk band members, that I've never seen before. But I was just like, man, I want to see them in more films.
Yeah.
There was the one guy who was kind of seemed like the tough guy out of the punk band. And the guy who had, like, the
blue hair.
The blue hair. They were super cool. Like, they were all awesome. But I was like, man, these guys are going toe-to-toe with seasoned actors who have been through every part of the system, and I've never seen these guys, and they're awesome.
Yeah, I think that's all due to his writing and his style and the editing, of course, because he makes, like I said, he makes everybody on the same level. And I think that's why the movie works so well, is that we spend kind of the same amount of time with everybody. You know, everybody's given the equal screen time, which, like I said, a lot of films don't do that, so we're left cold on certain characters. You know, because there's a lot of films that we watch where we only maybe care about one or two characters and the rest are just disposable.
Yeah.
In this film, whether it's the skinheads or the, you know, or the punk rock band that we're with, we just care about everybody.
Totally.
It's a unique thing. So.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really cool. I guess we better start closing it out here. I think my seating's going to start soon. And did you have any closing thoughts on Green Room?
No. That's pretty much it. It's just, hopefully you get to see it. It's going to be... I think around, I think they said like June or July of next year.
Yeah, it's going to be a long wait, dude. A24 has it, so it's in good hands. And, on that note, did you see that they signed a deal with A24 to make their next film?
Oh, the, what is it called? Here, like, In the Dark or something?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm excited for that, too.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, Macon Blair is going to write the screenplay. And
anything that Solner touches, I would definitely keep, because he's going to be one of those, you know, unless he wants to do it, I mean, he could be up there with the Hollywood guys.
Oh, totally.
But, again, maybe if he did that, he wouldn't probably have that punk rock approach anymore.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, as long as he keeps making films, I'll watch him, man.
So.
Cool. Why don't you plug some of your stuff online? And you don't want to do any of that?
Just... visit thescreencast.com and you'll find everything there.
Cool.
So.
All right. Thanks for doing this, man.
No problem.
All right. So the third part of this episode, I'm actually, through the magic of time and technology, I've got Bill here, our regular co-host, Bill Harris. He did Vancouver International Film Fest. So we're going to finish this episode with a recap of Fantastic Fest and VIFF. So say hello, Bill.
Hello. What up, man? Finally, we're back together.
Yeah, man.
The band is back together.
That's right. Yeah, Ed, man. How is Viff, like, in a nutshell?
Viff was good for movies, bad for everything else.
I've heard.
Yeah.
Bad lineup, just management.
Just really bad organization from the festival, and everybody was in a really bad mood. But I liked the movies. Oh, that's cool. What I was there for.
Yeah.
The cool thing about Viff, I got a cool little posse that I hang with, and they're all clutch.
Right on.
Love all those guys. But just the rest of the festival. Holy shit. People need to, like, smoke a bowl, calm the fuck down.
Yeah.
Because everybody was just in a really bad mood.
Damn.
Yeah. And I heard about you at Fantastic Fest. You're like, dude, this is so great.
Man.
I was at Fantastic Fest last year, and it was so great.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, man.
Dude. And at Fantastic Fest, I'm going to name drop here just because I can and just to piss you off a little bit. While I was waiting in line, I'd be like, turn around. I'm like, oh, there's Jeremy Solner, the director of Green Room and Blue Ruin.
Nice.
I'm going to chat him up for a little bit. So we talked a little bit. Before one of our movies started, he was going to see Victoria. I was going to see Victoria. So we just talked about that and talked about his first film, like Murder Party. And it was fun.
He retweeted my 5-star review of Green Room. Does that count?
Hey, that's pretty cool. You guys are friends now.
Yeah, friends. But yeah, it was Fantastic Fest, man.
Awesome.
Look, what, your third year?
Third year.
Yeah.
First year was 2013. It gets better for me every year, probably because I get to know a lot more people each year. I think because I was solo, in the sense that you weren't there, Sarah wasn't there, and Kyle wasn't there, it kind of forced me to be even more social than I normally am. So, I made a lot of new friends and got together with a bunch of familiar faces along the way, and the movies were amazing. Like, looking at my Letterboxd list, like, all my films I ranked from 1 to 20 were all just, like, fucking outstanding films.
Nice.
I would say between, like, 1 to 16 are movies I just love, love, love. And, like, 17 to 20 I thought were, you know, really great and everything. But overall, like, the best time.
Cool.
Yeah, so.
Think I'm going to be there next year.
That would be cool, man.
I think I've had enough of Viff. I really have.
Yeah.
It sucks. It's been going to that festival for 13 years, and I think I've had enough.
Yeah, and the price is ridiculous. Like,
yeah.
It was cheaper for, even though the festival's shorter, it was cheaper for me to go to Austin and go to Fantastic Fest than it was for you to, like, rent a hotel in Vancouver.
Yeah, my hotel alone was $2,700.
That's crazy.
It's pathetic. Yeah. And it was a nice hotel, and it was really quiet, and I liked it, but not again. Not going to happen again.
Yeah.
I felt like I got ripped off.
Oh, no way.
But yeah.
That's a terrible feeling.
Fantastic Fest.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to have to try to get a super fan badge in a couple of weeks.
Oh, totally, man. That's the way to go.
Yeah.
You have first choice of everything. You make your schedule before you even go. It's amazing.
Sweet.
So I guess today we're going to talk about our top films. So we'll go over our top 10 list, talk about some of the films we didn't like, and we will also have, like, honorable mentions, stuff like that. Everything in between. Did you want to start with that? Do you want to get into it?
So are we doing a 10?
Yeah, 10.
Okay. The really cool thing is I think that three of the films on my list are probably on yours. Or you've seen them at least.
Yeah.
So that's a cool thing. Viff and Fantastic Fest had a couple of films that kind of showed up both fests.
Yeah.
So
we're crossed over.
Yeah, that's been cool.
Oh, just before you start, I have a couple of movies here that I already watched before the festival that are on the list, but they were just that damn good.
You're a cheater. Number 10, a movie I know is way higher in your list. I just thought it took forever to get going. Number 10, Anomalisa.
Boo!
Yeah. I thought it took a while to get going.
It does. It does, admittedly, take a while to get going. But once you get into the rhythm of that movie.
Hey, man, no doubt about that. Like, the last part of that film is a beauty.
Yeah.
But I'm just, I'm thinking, okay. and I liked it. I loved it. I thought it was really good.
Yeah.
Just didn't think it was quite there. The one thing I really enjoyed about the film, three voice actors.
That's right.
The entire film.
Yeah.
The two mains, voiced by two people, David Thewlis and Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Yeah.
And then Tom Noonan did everybody else. Yeah. Didn't matter if they were a female.
Or a child.
Or a child or anything. It's just this dude.
Yeah. And that really takes you by surprise.
Yeah, it totally did.
The movie. It's crazy.
Yeah. I know it's higher on your list, so maybe we'll save a little bit for you.
I can chime in a little bit later.
Sure.
My number 10 is a short film, World of Tomorrow. Which actually played right before Anomalisa.
Yeah, on my fucking TV 4 months ago.
Yeah, we did watch it at Bill's place, about 4 months ago.
Dude, didn't we review it on the show already?
I think so. Come on. I watched it at Fantastic Fest.
Okay.
Love it all over again.
Oh, it's beautiful.
This is just amazing. Don Hertzfeldt was there, and he was very modest. He was very humble. He was just kind of like, I hope you guys like my movie. I think more than half of us had already
seen it. Oh, for sure.
We're like, we already love your movie, man.
Yeah. That's a cool little bonus.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That was, played right before Anomalisa. I'll give you one little tidbit. In the movie, the little girl refers to a monster, but the monster's name, that was his mom's cat's name.
Nice.
And his little niece, who did the voice in the movie, she saw the cat running by, and she was like, oh, it's William or whatever.
So, yeah, use my name, of course.
Yeah, that's right. That was a cool little thing to learn.
If you haven't seen any of Hertzfeldt's older shorts, they're really good, too. Yeah, he's pretty amazing.
Cool. So, yeah, that's my number 10.
My number 9, Jafar Panahi's Taxi. Directed by Jafar Panahi, who is a blacklisted director in Iran.
Oh, wow.
And isn't allowed to make films.
No way.
Except for he's made three films since he got banned.
That's unreal, really.
Yeah. This is not a film. Closed Curtain and Jafar Panahi's Taxi. It's just him driving a taxi around and picking people up and stuff happens. I think it's scripted. It's pretty obviously scripted. But for a dude just driving a taxi, this is like the greatest dude driving a taxi movie ever made. It's spectacular. It's a wonderful watch.
Cool.
The only thing is, I'm watching this film and I'm scared for this guy.
Yeah, because he's blacklisted.
This is not the place you want to be doing this kind of stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah, if you're in Canada, you might get a little leeway. That's but right. I'm just I love your films, man. But could you maybe stop?
Yeah, take care of yourself.
Yeah, I love you, but stop.
Yeah.
But yeah, every year it seems he puts out another film.
That's crazy.
So yeah, number 9, Jafar Panahi's Taxi. Check that out. I have no idea when it's coming out, but it's spectacular stuff.
Right on.
Yeah.
My number 9 is, I believe you pronounce her name, Karen Kasuma, The Invitation. I don't really want to say too much about this film because it's not, I forgot when the release date is.
It's Draft House, right?
Yeah. So yeah, they're going to put out the film. It'll be available eventually. Go in blind if you can. It's a really cool house party with adults. And
we're kid and play there? No.
It's going to make House Party 1 look like House Party 2. A bunch of stuffy rich people all trying to be nice. There's some weird vibes in the air. And that's all I want to say about it.
That's cool.
It's really cool. Great performances. I was on the edge of my seat the whole time. And most of the time, I wasn't sure why. Just felt uneasy. And it's great.
It's that fucking Draft House pizza you ate.
It's probably it. Yeah, it's my number 9, The Invitation.
My number 8 is Rick Alverson's movie Entertainment. If you went to VIFF, they had a bumper before every movie. And there was a scene from Entertainment that they put in the bumper of the main character blowing raspberries into a microphone. Nice. And I probably saw this 80 times.
Oh, okay.
And I saw this late in the festival, and I thought, I'm going to hate this film because I hate that scene.
Yeah.
And it's in the movie. I know it. And it's going to piss me off. This is like the saddest, realest film I've seen all year.
Oh, really?
It's about a comedian starting a tour on the road and just completely losing his mind on the road.
Oh, wow.
Just keeps on doing the same performance every night, and people just keep on yelling at him, and he gets progressively and progressively worse until it just goes boom.
Wow.
And it's incredibly sad and beautiful, and it's not for everyone.
Yeah.
I talked to people who hated this film.
Oh, really?
And I'm like, that's cool. I totally get where you're coming from, but I thought it was like the truest, saddest film I've seen this year, and I think it's
wow
beautiful.
Cool.
Yeah.
I can't wait for that. Is that from the same guy who did the comedy?
Yeah.
Okay.
I hated that film.
I love the comedy,
See, he makes movies that are so polar opposite. Like, this one is completely different.
Yeah.
And I hated the comedy.
Yeah.
Hated it.
Wow.
I think we both saw that at VIFF, right?
Actually, no, I didn't see it there. That was the year where I was still just going on the weekend.
Okay.
And on that poster, didn't he make fun of himself? He used like bad quotes,
people yeah
saying this is the worst movie ever and stuff.
Because it was.
It was awesome. I love that character.
He's
such a douchebag.
That's what's cool about him. Like, people like either love or really hate his films. Yeah. And I expected to hate this one, and it just blew me away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So yeah. Look for it.
Yeah, entertainment. Can't wait for it. Right on.
That was my number 8.
Nice. My number 8 is Pablo Larraín's The Club, which is just a devastating gut punch over and over, and I loved every second of it. It is such a good film. It's about a bunch of priests who are in a house. They're there because they did some bad stuff in their past, and another priest joins them. Some shit goes down, and a young priest comes to investigate the incident. And he uncovers some more dark shit.
Yeah.
And it just gets darker and darker. And, man, it is a beautiful, bleak, just murky film that I absolutely loved every second. The performances are outstanding. And not once did I feel like I was being manipulated. It just felt real. And the Fantastic Fest programmer I talked with, his name's Evrim, he said that Larraín used headlines from the last 8 years to write that story.
Wow.
So these are like all based on real stories that have appeared in the newspapers worldwide and whatnot. So
I'm going to jump in.
All right.
Because this is my number 7 film.
Oh, shit.
Of VIFF.
Right on.
Something to be said about Pablo Larraín, eh?
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't make the same film twice.
Yeah.
Like, his last film was a super upbeat, like, Chilean voter movie called No, which I thought was one of my favorite films of that year. And it's beautiful and happy and uplifting. And this film is just a gut punch. I remember after I saw it before you.
Yeah.
I texted you. I'm like, dude, watch out for The Club.
Even with your warning, I was like, oh, I was in a very small theater. I didn't know anybody in there. So I walked out, and all my friends were like, oh, I just saw this like metal horror film. And I'm like, oh, I just had my soul crushed. I need to go home.
You know, while being really harsh, I still think it's kind of a beautiful film.
Totally.
Yeah, like I think he's a really amazing filmmaker.
Yeah.
That nobody really knows about. Like, because I remember when we were talking about the film festival, and I was talking with other people. I'm like, yeah, dude, the new Pablo Larraín film. And everybody's like, who's Pablo Larraín? And I'm like, oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's great.
It is outstanding.
Yeah. I saw it twice at VIFF. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, 1.5 times. I hit a bit of a wall and kind of fell asleep during the second viewing for the first 45 minutes or so.
Yeah.
Because I was like 80 films deep in 2 weeks, and I was really tired.
That's crazy, man.
But yeah, lovely film.
Yeah, it's great.
And it's not easy.
Definitely not.
No. Yeah, so be warned. That's our warning for you.
Yeah.
It's not an easy film. So that was my number 7. So
right on.
Yeah.
Yeah, my number 7 is The Brand New Testament.
This sounded cool.
It's amazing.
I listened to your guys' podcast with Will Lindis and you and from Fantastic Fest, and that's the film that I was like, fuck, I fuck.
Yeah, I know.
Why am I not watching that?
Yeah. Yeah. And the headline of it's like the poster quote. It's, God exists and he lives in Brussels. And he's just a total asshole. He lives in some shitty apartment with his wife and a daughter. And the daughter is kind of rebelling against God. She doesn't like the world he's created. She doesn't like the rules he's made. Like, as he's writing the rules for the world, for Earth, whatever, he's writing pretty much like, what's it called? Murphy's Law kind of stuff. Like,
nice.
Every time you drop the toast, it'll land jam facing down. And he's giggling to himself the whole time, right? It's hilarious. And he's like, whenever you're in a line and there's a line next to you, the other one will always move faster. just basically a piece of shit. So his daughter is like, I need to change things. And she starts to change things. She recruits disciples. And it's hilarious.
Damn it, I need to see this.
Yeah, it is so funny. And I don't really want to say much more than that, but it's funny. It's very heartwarming, very charming. It's just very little to pick on in this film in terms of things I didn't enjoy. It was just, as I was watching it, it was just such a great experience. And can't wait to see it again.
I don't know about your list or whatever your philosophy is on this podcast, but I think the whole idea of us doing this top 10 is for people to find new movies they might not have known about.
That's definitely part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think between us, we've watched 150 movies in the last month. Yeah. So soak it in, people.
Oh, yeah.
Soak it in.
Because this is all the best stuff.
Yeah. That was your number seven?
Seven, yeah. Okay. So you're on six.
So number six, French film from Stéphane Brise, The Measure of a Man.
Okay.
The Cannes Best Actor Award went to Vincent Lindon this year, and he is just absolutely spectacular. And the whole idea of a middle-aged man losing his job and having to try to find a new job and just absolutely being demeaned at the same time, because looking for a job is terrible, especially when you're 50-something years old.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like just an honest, true film that I've never seen something... Nobody's ever depicted this before like this. It's so honest. Just the way that he's just constantly demeaned by everybody around him just because he's old. And yeah. It sucks.
Yeah.
Stuck up on me.
Wow.
Yeah. Don't know if anybody's going to be able to see it, but Measure of a Man. It's beautiful.
Wow. That sounds good.
Lovely.
Right on.
That was my number six.
Cool. My number six, I'm pretty sure won't be on your list. I'm going to venture that guess. High Rise, Ben Wheatley's film.
I'll jump in on this one.
Okay, all right.
It's not on my list, but...
Okay. Yeah, you can comment on it.
Yeah.
Ben Wheatley, man, he is a crazy filmmaker. He's a guy who's also not making the same film twice.
Yeah.
His last film I wasn't a big fan of, A Field in England, but I still appreciated the beauty of watching that film. I bought the Blu-ray just because...
So did I.
Yeah.
Just so I could try to listen. I wanted to listen to the commentary track to see if he could maybe let me figure some stuff out.
Yeah.
Didn't work.
Yeah.
So he got his like $13 out of me. But
yeah. So yeah, but I really loved High Rise though. Even though it's sort of on the same fabric of A Field in England, at least structure wise, it's presented in snippets. You get a lot of bits that feel a little bit out of place, but they all blend together. Like it's about a community in a high rise. As you imagine, the richest people live on the upper floors, and as you go down, you get into middle class, lower class, and the dirt poor.
It's a big giant class war.
Yeah. And at the top, the guy who runs the show, it's the most ridiculous. You see some of the most ridiculous things up there. You're just like, what the fuck?
Played by Jeremy Irons, of all people.
Yeah, Jeremy Irons.
Yeah.
He runs the show. And in the middle of the pack is Tom Hiddleston, who's kind of the entry point for the upper class, middle class, and lower class. He's just charismatic as hell in this film. And a big surprise for me was Luke Evans.
Luke Evans pretty much steals the film.
He does. He is just a powerhouse in this film. I have no problem saying that.
Yeah, he's good.
He steals the show from everybody. Whenever he's on the screen, he's just stealing scenes. And I've never been a big Luke Evans fan, but this is the kind of film where I'm like, man, I need to keep an eye out for this guy.
I think I liked about 70% of this film.
Yeah.
I thought it just got really sloppy at the end.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's beautiful. Wheatley and Laurie Rose they're on that page, man. They know exactly what they're doing. The performances are great. I just think it loses steam, but I still liked it. It's not in my top 10.
Yeah.
It was on my honorable mentions list. Oh, though. Cool. I think it's interesting.
Yeah.
And I'd rather you be interesting than shitty.
Oh, totally.
Like, you can make the stupidest film in the world, but as long as it's interesting, I'm still going to give you a chance.
Oh, yeah.
And this film is interesting.
Yeah.
I don't think it all works, mm-hmm. but I think it's decent.
I really enjoyed it. Some of the commentary is a little on the nose, but sometimes you need that a little bit in filmmaking when it can work. Like, I don't like being beat over the head in certain situations. But this one is just like, it's such a trip. That's like, compared to it, it's like being on a trip with like ABBA covers.
That's the best part of the film.
Yeah. Yeah. The music was outstanding.
Cause I'm like, why do I know this song? Oh shit. It's ABBA. And it's an orchestral version of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So cool.
Yeah. There's it was great.
Really cool musical cues and high rise. It's the kind of film where I walked out going, man, I can't wait to watch that again. Can't wait to own the Blu-ray so I can watch it many times over.
I want to watch it again.
Yeah.
I was knee-deep in a very hardcore film festival.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like that film doesn't need to be watched in a really hardcore film festival.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's my number 6, High Rise.
It's definitely no Sightseers, I'll tell you that. Yeah, right on. Number 5, Room, written by Lenny Abramson, starring Brie Larson and Jacob Tremblay, this little kid in this movie. My God, is he great. And Brie Larson is just amazing.
She's in her own league.
Yeah, you know, all the plastic statues for Brie Larson that we don't give a fuck about. Yeah, it's this movie destroyed me.
Wow.
I saw the press screening up in Vancouver before the festival, and I'm not afraid to say I totally Adrian'd that shit. Yeah. I was a mess. And I saw it again during the festival just because I thought so highly of it. And second viewing reaffirmed it. It's great.
Right on.
Opens in a week.
Oh, cool.
So everybody's going to get a chance to see it.
Yeah.
And you probably already read the book, so you don't really need me to tell you that.
Yeah.
It's great.
Cool.
Love it. Hope you like it.
Yeah.
But every time I think you're going to like a film, you're like, oh. So.
It was no San Andreas, man.
Get in the helicopter, Rock.
Yeah.
So yeah, number 5, Room.
Cool. My number 5 is The Lobster. This movie is batshit crazy, and I love it.
Speaking of films that I liked 70 to 80% of.
Yeah, I don't get why. I saw your comments, and I was like, oh, really?
Yeah, it gets ludicrous at the end.
I love it.
Which is funny, you know, because it's so wacky and cool, and then it just gets really stupid.
No way.
Yeah.
I was with it all the way through.
Really? Yeah, okay.
Absolutely.
I respect that.
Yeah. This is for those that aren't aware of The Lobster. It's basically a totally different world. It's where single people are outcasts, quite literally outcasts. When you're single, you have to go to this hotel/resort and you have how many days? 40,
45, but you can add on to it.
Yeah.
By catching other single people.
Yeah.
Which is so weird. Yeah.
So you have 45 days to find true love. So there's a bunch of single people there. You're all doing activities together, going to workshops together, and hunting single people together, because there's times when they go out in the woods and they bag single people with tranquilizers, and they get days added on for capturing these outcasts. It's basically an extreme examination of the way society views couples and single people. Like, on one hand, couples are so much more desirable because you're secure, you're happy, blah, blah, blah. But then you get the single side of it. They're going, well, those people aren't really happy. They're not, they're making compromises. They're lying to each other just so they have the appearance of being happy.
And all the single people in this film are weird and shady.
They are. Just like they are in the real world.
Yeah.
Bunch of weirdos.
Sure. I respected this film.
Yeah.
I just, as I said, but like High Rise, I think it loses its way at the end. There's a plot device at the end of The Lobster, which pissed me off.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I thought it all fit together perfectly.
That's cool.
I love every bit of this movie. The Lobster is really funny. It's really heartwarming, very touching. It moved me quite a bit. And as you can imagine, yes, I did cry at a certain point in the movie.
Nice.
So, yeah, that's my number 5.
I'm also thinking this film might benefit from a regular viewing, not possibly a knee-deep in a badass film festival.
Yeah, it was the third movie I watched at the festival, so...
It was like a week and a half into mine, so... Yeah,
so you were like 50 films in.
At least.
Yeah, so number 5, The Lobster.
My number 4 is 45 Years from Andrew Haigh, starring Charlotte Rampling and Tom Courtney, about a couple who are celebrating their weird 45th anniversary. Because on the 40th, the husband had a medical scare and they couldn't do it. And they probably should have done it on the 40th, because the 45th wasn't going very well.
Oh, boy.
Bunch of stuff comes out in the open, and the film is not nice, but it's a beautiful film. Saw this one twice, too.
Oh, wow.
I broke my rule a couple times this year. I usually don't see films twice. Charlotte Rampling is on another level in this film, and so is Tom Courtney. I don't know when this opens, but you got to seek this one out.
Cool.
It is spectacular. I just made that word up. Spectacular.
Right.
Yeah. It has maybe the coolest closing shot of a film I've seen this year.
Oh, really?
Bar none.
Wow, that's cool, man.
Yeah.
Right on.
So, yeah, number 4, 45 Years.
Nice. My number 4, I'll keep it brief. So you haven't seen it yet. Most of the world hasn't seen it yet. I'm one of the cool kids.
Don't break the embargo. Actually, the embargo has been broken by everybody.
Oh, Crimson Peak?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's bullshit. No, it's not Crimson Peak, by the way.
I know, I was just being a dick.
That's like my number 20 or 21, I think, festival. My number 4 is The Witch. Man, this movie kicks all kinds of ass, dude.
Weirdly, I thought that one might be higher.
Yeah, it's... It probably is possibly interchangeable with my number 3. But man, this movie's just on another level. Like, I'm not sure of the exact time frame, but it's like set in the 1700s or 1800s. At least, maybe 1700s. And all the dialogue feels period accurate. Like, they're speaking... Like, I can't even try to deliver any dialogue. But if you watch a trailer, you can see the way they talk. It's like that through the entire film. And it takes some getting used to, because I'm a modern guy. Not well read and in terms of old time books and whatnot.
I have a feeling I'll be seeing this film in a month and a half at the Whistler Film Festival. So I don't really want to know much about it.
Yeah.
And I've seen the trailer. It's creepy as fuck. Looks great. But I read this really amazing tweet from Fantastic Fest from a guy named Tyler Magger, at Tyler Magger. He said, "The Witch, this, all goddamn day, on repeat, forever, fuck yes, motherfucker, hail fucking Satan, I love you."
Nice. Yeah, Tyler's a friend of mine. Actually.
Nice.
Yeah.
I read that tweet. I was just like, yes.
Yeah, dude. That's basically the movie, dude. Oh, man.
Love it.
It got me totally jacked up. I actually saw this one twice because I loved it that much.
Oh.
I was just like, and because I wanted to, some of the dialogue the first time went straight over my head.
Nice.
And again, I saw it a very late time. And yeah. The Witch, I believe it opens March or April next year.
Yeah, so it's early next year sometime.
Yeah, so it's outstanding. If you don't like it, You're wrong.
You're wrong.
You're stupid. And you should stop listening to this podcast. So my number four, The Witch.
So my number three, I think, might be higher on your list.
It will be. I know what it is.
Green Room.
Yeah, that's right.
What can we say about this one, eh?
It kicks ass.
Holy shit. This film ended at the Rio, and I felt like the collective fist pump pretty much go in the air of the crowd. They were so into this film. And I don't think you're going to have, like, action adventure-wise, like, violence-wise, you're going to have a funner time at the film, theater this year. I guess next year.
Opens
in April.
Yeah.
Don't even want to spoil this one either. I didn't have a clue what this film was about.
Yeah.
Other than a punk band goes to a gig and neo-Nazis are there and bad stuff happens. That's all you need to know.
Yeah.
That's all you need to know.
And these are really, really bad neo-Nazis. Like, oh, man. Even when they were playing music, I was like, oh, get the fuck out of there.
Totally. This is... how about that first song they played at the neo-Nazi compound?
Oh, that was sweet.
So good.
Yeah.
I seriously cannot wait for people to see this film.
Yeah.
Cannot wait.
It's a hell of a ride, man. It is higher. It's my number one.
Holy shit.
I was so jacked up on this movie. It was between that and my number two. But I picked this.
Anomalisa?
No. Anomalisa is number three, actually.
Okay. I thought that might be your number two.
Yeah. Okay. No. This one, I'm a big fan of Jeremy Saulnier. I think he's... This is not a spoiler for the movie or anything, but he has a big background in punk rock. I guess he was way into that scene in the 90s and such. So he knows all that stuff.
Nice.
All the stuff that's happening in the movie, whether it's the gangs involved, the different subgenres of neo-Nazis and skinheads and punks. But in a sense, I feel like he's the punk band of cinema right now.
Yeah, man.
He is just screaming loud and doesn't give a fuck about what anybody thinks. He's making what he wants on his terms. And I applaud him for that. I think what he's doing is amazing. Yeah, Green Room kicks so much ass. I'm right there with you. I don't want to post any spoilers for
anybody. No, man. But everybody has to see this one.
Yeah. And just brief comments. The cast, outstanding. There were a few people I didn't know at all.
No.
And I was just like, holy shit. Those kids were amazing.
Have I ever told you that I have a massive crush on Aaliyah Shawkat?
Oh, no, you haven't mentioned
that. Oh, my God.
Nice. Yeah. Right on.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a hell of a movie. And, of course, Sir Patrick Stewart's in this one.
As the leader of the skinheads.
He's the leader of skinheads.
Yeah.
Being gangster as fuck.
So good.
Yeah.
Oh, that's my number three.
Cool, yeah. My number one. So you're my number three. We mentioned it earlier, Anomalisa. I just love this movie because it's so relatable, just in terms of even just little things while you're watching the film. I know it sounds silly, but like the guy takes a shower and it's too hot and it's too cold, and you can relate to that. And I appreciate the fact that they put that in there because it's stop motion.
So yeah.
Who knows how long it took to film that one scene. I appreciated the love story in this film because it's a condensed version of a full relationship arc. The guy who, he's clearly not happy with how things are going in his life. He meets somebody new and it's very exciting. And you go from there. Everything from that point forward felt like familiar ground. I think that's why a lot of people love this film, really connect with it. And the performances are just outstanding. Like... David Thewlis, he's one of those guys, I believe, flies under the radar a little bit. Even though he's done a ton of work, ton of great stuff.
He was in Harry Potter.
That's true. He's
Harry Potter. Sorry to ruin that for you, buddy.
Yeah.
Bill, you're such a dick.
But yeah, I adore this film and can't wait for the rest of the world to see it. I think it comes out around Christmas time.
Yeah, so. I want to rewatch it. I said this a lot this episode. There's only so much you can take in. Like, sometimes you're if there's like some really cool stuff going on the screen, sometimes you're just tired at a film festival.
Oh, totally.
And I think I might have missed something here. I didn't fall asleep or anything. I was wide awake.
Yeah.
But there's something in this film that I don't get.
Oh, I
which see. Also might be the reason why it's lower on my list.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Possibly. And yeah, I did. When I watched this, it was like the third film I watched of the whole festival.
It was my second to last.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
Yeah.
Might have been burnt out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's my number three.
My number two is Youth from Paolo Sorrentino, Italian filmmaker. First English language film.
Oh, cool.
Starring Michael Caine, Harvey Keitel, Rachel Weisz, Paul Dano, and Jane Fonda. About older men relaxing at a country club and trying to figure out how to be younger again. Everything about this film is perfect. It's the best shot film of the year. It's probably the best acted film of the year, but it's not my number one film of the year.
Oh, wow.
Sounds weird, eh?
That's right.
More on that later. Everything about this film. I remember when I got out of the film, I said this was my favorite film of the year.
Yeah.
By far.
Yeah. That's cool.
Which freaks me out because, it was The Look of Silence, and that's like an amazing film.
Oh, yeah.
And my number one film, I think, is way better than Youth.
Oh, really?
Which really freaks me out. Yeah. It's perfect.
Right on, dude.
Other than the fact that it's not my number one.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, and I hope everybody gets to see it. It's going to be a big Oscar film. It's not going to win anything. Yeah. It's too weird.
Oh, okay.
It's too beautiful.
Yeah.
Oscar doesn't like those kinds of films.
No, they're like mainstream shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Number two, Youth.
My number two is a film that almost flew under the radar until a bunch of people watched it and went, oh my god, this movie is fucking amazing.
I got a fucking rant about this film.
You do? Oh, okay.
Fuck yeah.
All right, it's the movie Too Late. It's from Dennis Houck. He's a first-time feature-length filmmaker, Los Angeles-based. This film's very pulpy, very 90s throwback, very catchy dialogue. Very sharp and clever. And no, I'm not describing a Quentin Tarantino film.
Just about to say that.
It's called Too Late. And a lot of people compare it to Tarantino, and I think that's really unfair. It's unfair on the film because it sets unrealistic expectations. But it all comes straight from him. He is not ripping off Quentin Tarantino, which is funny when people say rip off Tarantino film because he rips off everybody else.
Yeah.
But yeah, Too Late is about a detective who investigates an incident surrounding a very young woman who's in danger. And along the way, you meet all these witty, fast-talking hoodlums and strippers and trophy wife. You meet all kinds of crazy characters. It's just a beautiful film. And John Hawks is the detective, private detective in the film, and you can tell that the character, I don't know if it's just the way it's written, the way John Hawks portrays it, or the way, you can tell that he wants to be like an old-time black and white noir detective. The way he talks in the film, he's very self-aware of what he's doing. I think that pisses off a lot of people, but that's just the way the character is. He takes a lot of pride in what he does. I don't think that's a bad thing. I think it's pretty cool.
Cool.
John
Hawks is good in everything that he's in.
Oh, yeah.
I pointed out even in that shitty film Everest.
Oh, yeah.
He's really good in that.
Yeah, he is.
He was really good in Eastbound and Down.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen all of them.
The Danny McBride Show. He's really good in that.
Yeah.
Can I rant?
Sure.
So how do you not make money in the film industry?
Oh, you film it on 35mm.
And so I'm only going to show it in 35mm. Well, guess what? There's four theaters in America that can show 35mm.
Yeah.
Congratulations, you're broke.
He's not in it for money, though.
I know.
That's a true artist.
No, but at the same time, nobody's going to see your film.
It'll come out eventually. They'll find some distributor.
Blu-ray.
Yeah, but it really has to be seen in 35mm. Once you eventually do see the film, you'll see why. I think that's super cool, though.
I know, but on a shitty print with a bad bulb. Last time I saw something in 35mm, it looked terrible.
Yeah. No, this one looked really good, but because it's first run
and it's Draft House.
Print. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. Not everybody's got a Draft House around them.
Yeah.
So yeah, just I thought that was stupid. Make a DCP of it and let people see it because I want to see the film.
Mm-hmm.
I'll pay money to see it.
Yeah.
Take my money, dude.
Yeah.
Rant over.
I don't know, man. You haven't seen the film, so you're already, like, against it, it sounds like.
I'm not. I really want to see it.
Yeah.
I just think it's he's completely shot himself in the foot.
Yeah.
There's no place in Canada right now that can play 35 millimeter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Except for, like, maybe one or two places.
Yeah. Like Toronto and maybe...
Cinematheque in Vancouver.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll book it. 24-hour film festival.
That'd be rad.
Yeah, so... Yeah, actually, that's a good idea. We'll put them together. Bring this movie in.
Yeah.
I know that aspect of it sucks. And yeah, it does. It is one I wish I could be like, yo, you guys, it comes out on demand in 3 months. You need to see it. That's not the case. Not right now.
So no.
We'll see what happens.
That's cool. I really want to see it.
Yeah.
Can't wait.
Yeah.
Just hope I'm able to see it.
Yeah. See, on that downer note, that's my number two. Thanks, man.
Number two. Sorry, man. Had to get it out. Number one, best film of the year. It's already over, folks. There's no question on this one.
Yeah.
Nothing is going to beat this. My number one film of the year and number one film of the Vancouver International Film Festival, Son of Saul.
Oh, yeah. You mentioned that. Son of Saul.
Directed by Laszlo Nemes. First time director.
Wow.
Yeah. Shot in the Academy ratio. Nazi Germany, Auschwitz. I can't even describe this film. It's like nothing you've ever seen for a Holocaust film. Everything that you think happens in a Holocaust film happens in the background blurry.
Oh, really?
It's all really tight, like first-person shots. And it's this man who cleans up the bodies after people have been gassed.
Oh, wow.
And he pulls out this one person, and it's a little boy, and the boy is still alive. And it's his son.
Oh, brutal.
Yeah. So the whole movie is him trying to properly bury his son.
Wow.
And you see nothing like this. This film destroyed me.
Wow.
And plus the fact that this guy is just a world-class shooter. You can watch this film, and if you could travel back in time, you could walk around Auschwitz pretty much of this place because it's like perfect. Like it's like he goes throughout the entire camp trying to do stuff, and it's A level, man. Right. Nothing better this year.
Right on.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I love this film.
Yeah.
And I hope you get to see it because I hope you like it as much as I do. But
yeah. And it played Fantastic Fest, and of the people I talked with, they were like, dude, this is not a Fantastic Fest movie. It's so devastating. I was like, yeah, I'll skip it. I can't remember what I saw instead of it, but yeah.
I'm shaking my head at you right now.
Whatever. Whatever. You haven't seen The Witch yet, so.
That'll be taken care of soon.
Yeah. Cool. So yeah, that's our top 10 list. You want to talk about some honorable mentions, or where do you want to start with the rest of the stuff we have to talk about?
Let's get the shit out of the way first.
Okay. Yeah, let's do that. Bad movies we saw.
How many do you have?
Three or four? Yeah, I'll just do three.
Okay.
I'll start. The worst movie I saw at Fantastic Fest was one of the ones that were pimping hardcore. It's Laser Team from Rooster Teeth. This movie is absolute garbage.
Nice.
It is a bad, bad version of somebody trying to be like, Broken Lizard.
No.
And those guys suck too.
They do suck.
They're terrible, but it's a shittier version of Broken Lizard.
Like 5 minutes of Super Troopers is good.
Yeah.
If that.
Yeah. I'd give it about 30 minutes.
Really?
Yeah. So yeah, Laser Team sucks. Yakuza Apocalypse was my next shitty movie. It's
do you believe in the Takashi Miike curse now?
Oh yeah, I do. you know the opening is really cool. It starts out with a really awesome like samurai fight and guy versus a whole bunch of henchmen and just cutting people down.
Nice.
I'm like, holy shit! I made the right choice. Yeah, my first midnight movie of Fantastic Fest, and the rest of it is incoherent bullshit. Just terrible, boring story, weird for the sake of weird, And it has a kind of cool ending, but...
I've sworn off Mikkei.
Yeah.
Join the club, man.
Yeah, I think I will. And another one I watched, it was really bad. It's called What We Become. Forgot which country made it. But it's the most generic zombie film I've ever seen in my life. I have no idea why it exists or why it played one of the best genre film festivals in the world.
It
was terrible.
The problem with Fantastic Fest, they seem to get really bad slashers and zombie films that I don't understand how they got through the process of selection.
Yeah.
I just don't. They sucked. I saw like 3 or 4 of them last year.
Yeah. A lot of people said last year was probably one of the worst years of programming. I'm not sure about that, but...
there was some good stuff last year.
There was.
Yeah.
But What We Become was just generic. Every single shot, every single sequence, you know what's coming. Beat for beat. It just goes through the paint-by-numbers bullshit.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Should have shown Wormwood again.
That would have been cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even the Netflix version I would have watched on the big screen.
Nice. So, yeah, I got 3, too. 3 bottom films. The Closing Gala of Viff. I Saw the Light.
Ah.
The Hank Williams biopic with Tom Hiddleston.
Yeah.
It's really bad.
Wow.
Really bad. The director was there. And everybody that I know was like wanted to leave 30 minutes in.
Oh, no way.
Every time Hiddleston sings, it's pretty good. Like, he's actually doing that quite well. Just everything else about it sucks.
Oh, brutal.
Just sucks.
Yeah.
So avoid that one when it comes out. I have no idea when it's coming out, but don't
skip it.
Do not give it your money.
Yeah.
The new Guy Madden film, The Forbidden Room.
Okay.
I only know like 2 people who lasted through this film. I lasted an hour and a half, and I deserve something.
Oh, shit.
It is awful.
Wow.
Guy Madden sucks. He's lost his mind. We all knew it, but we all thought, yeah, it's like the Takashi Miike thing. He used to be a really good filmmaker. Yeah. So did Guy Madden. Not anymore. Just a piece of shit.
Wow.
And I lasted an hour and a half of 2.5 hours.
Oh, shit.
And that hurts. Yeah. Props to Zach Mosley, who lasted through that thing.
Nice.
Yeah. Oof. And my number one worst film of the year for VIFF, I didn't even see the whole thing. I saw 15 minutes of it.
Oh, nice.
This is how much I hated this film.
Nice.
It's called London Road.
Okay.
And it's a musical about a serial killer who killed some people in an English town in the 80s.
Okay.
Everybody sings their dialogue, like Les Mis.
Oh, awesome.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, this does not work at all. And you're like, and then you're just like, I got to go.
Yeah.
I lasted 15 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah, it was... easily the worst thing I've seen this year.
And that's crazy.
And I saw 10% of the running time.
Damn.
I usually don't like to do that. I usually don't like to rate things that I didn't see all the way through.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's awful.
Brutal.
So yeah, avoid that.
Was it as bad as that film we saw at VIFF last year?
Worse.
Worse. Remember it was that filmmaker's last film?
Yeah.
And everybody's like, oh, it's his last film. And it was garbage.
Yeah. No, this just avoid this one. And damn. London Road, everybody I know hated it.
Wow.
What they saw of it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's my worst.
Crazy. I'll put it on my do not watch list. So we also have some honorable mention stuff, right?
Yeah.
We'll treat this like the lightning round. We'll just quickly rifle them off and get them on people's radars. All right, so my first, I would say this was probably one of my top favorite discoveries of the festival, Liza the Fox Fairy. It's about a woman who is single, alone. She works for a rich old lady and wants to fall in love. I would guess she's mid-20s to maybe 30 years old. And
does she want to become a lobster?
No, she does not want to become a lobster. Instead, the film opens with her, the song and dance with a Japanese pop singer who's dead. It's her his ghost, and she talks to him through the whole film.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And it is so charming, so funny, so heartfelt. A lot of people... I'm not one of these people, but a lot of people compare the spirit of it to Amelie. I don't say it because I take that shit super seriously.
That's one of my favorite films of all time, yeah.
I can sort of see where they're coming from, but this is a film all on its own. Because she wants to find love, the Japanese pop singer guy curses her, and everybody who falls in love with her dies in very funny fashion. It's hilarious. And nice. Then you're treated to a song and dance, usually during or after or before they die. It is so funny.
Yeah, I need to see that.
Yeah, it's really good. So yeah, Lies of the Fox Fairy. Animated film called The Boy and the Beast. It's from the same guy who did The Girl Who Leapt Through Time.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it is outstanding.
Cool.
Just so many tears streaming down my face, dude. It was honestly like a waterfall. It's about a boy who has a beast. He
Brock Lesnar?
Yeah, that's right. He goes into another world, another reality. The beast kind of takes him under his wing and offers to train him, become a fighter and all this stuff. And it's basically like two guys who have some flaws and they want to try to repair them together. Cool. Without knowing it, kind of thing. It's a beautiful film. The animation is outstanding. Like,
nice.
Way better than anything Disney's putting out these days. It is such a beautiful film to watch. One shot, like, took my breath away. And, of course, put mist in my eyes just because it was so beautiful. So, yeah, The Boy and the Beast. Put that on your radar.
Did it have a distributor?
I'm sure it will. Cause it,
like, G-Kids or something?
I think so.
Cool.
Yeah, it had a Japanese sort of intro.
Kanji logo at the front?
Yeah, I believe so. There's a documentary called Man vs. Snake, which I highly, highly recommend.
Heidi Ho, I've seen this.
Oh, you have? Nice.
Yes.
Did you love it?
I loved it.
Nice. Hell yeah, man. Yeah, it's...
I was hoping you might bring this one up. Yeah. I was going to save it. Oh, nice. I wasn't going to say anything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's... A lot of people call it a spiritual sequel to The King of Kong. I call it its own film.
Just because it has a couple of the same people in it?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Billy Mitchell's in it for about 5 minutes. And
via phone.
Yeah. And the referee guy, Walter, is in it. It's about a game called Nibbler, which nobody has heard of.
It's like the stupidest game ever.
It's the dumbest game. You basically play this worm thing and you eat pellets. And you keep getting longer. Every time you eat pellets, you have to navigate through mazes. And if you run into your own tail, you die and start over again. But yeah, it was the beginning of marathon gaming. Because it was the first game where it was possible to score a billion points. This guy named Tim McVeigh.
No, not that Tim McVeigh.
No, not the guy who bombed Oklahoma City. He's just a gamer kid. When he was like 15 or 16... He played, what, 36 hours or something like that?
Yeah.
36 hours straight of playing Nibbler to get a billion points. And, yeah, he became the first person to ever score a billion points in a video game. And this is kind of the story of him as an adult. He's, what, like in his 40s. And he kind of wants to go back. And somebody allegedly beat his score. So he wants to go back and do it all over again. But he is not a young teenager anymore.
Not the same dude he used to be.
Yeah.
And I guess the fact that Nibbler started to get back into the news, other people decided they were going to try to do it too. And it kind of became this weird dynamic between these two guys.
Yeah.
And the other guy is like this total metalhead with like yeah. dreads and...
From Alberta.
Yeah, it's cool. But yeah, it's a fun film, man.
Yeah.
Really watchable.
Yeah, really, really entertaining and... It's a documentary, so it's all real, and these people are just so lovable. Like, Tim McVeigh is such a cool guy.
Yep.
And I had a chance to chat with him a little bit after the movie.
Oh, he was there?
Yeah.
Cool.
He was like, a month ago, I didn't even know this was happening, and here I am. And he had to, like, take time off work, and it was hard to get time off work, and Jeez. He was there. And he wasn't there for long, unfortunately, but, yeah, he's a really nice guy. So, yeah, Man vs. Snake... put it on your radar. See it as soon as you can.
Also has a really cool closing credit track that sounds like a really cheesy 80s metal song.
Oh, yeah.
About man versus snake.
Yeah, that's right.
So catchy and weird.
Yeah,
that's loved right. it.
Right on.
That's a fun film, man.
Yeah. My last sort of honorable mention is Baskin, a film that was built to be showed at midnight and watched late at night with all the lights out.
So is this film as gross as I've heard?
It is really gross.
Nice. Yeah.
There's orgies with violence, feces, and other bodily fluids. And,
sounds like my kind of movie, man.
Oh, yeah, man. It's crazy. It's nutty. It is a trip. It is... I thought it'd be scary. I think I'm just getting desensitized, though, because it all takes place in a dungeon. They go in this dark building where it just screams, do not go in there.
It's a bunch of cops, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Turkish cops. There's four of them. Starts out as like a buddy cop film. They're all hanging out and talking about their sexual conquests. And then they go to this house, this mansion, where...
The shit goes down.
Yeah, it's like Gateway to Hell kind of stuff. And it gets crazy. And it's best to watch it with a group of friends if you can. And watch it at midnight. Turn all the lights down. It does have distribution, so see it theatrically if you can. It is crazy, crazy.
Okay, so I know it has distribution, but will that thing get a rating?
I don't know. I've
heard some stuff.
Yeah, I think Raven is... playing it for Canada.
Oh, it's different in Canada.
Yeah.
Raven Banner.
It'll get a hard R, I believe.
Wow.
In the US.
Sounds pretty pussy then.
I don't know, dude. You never know with the ratings boards.
Oh, totally.
For sure. Because, they're far more regulated up here.
Well, it's funny because we were talking after Anomalisa. How come that film got rated R, but Trey Parker and Matt Stone had to cut a bunch out of Team America World Police because the puppets were thrusting too much.
Yeah.
There's a lot of thrusting in Anomalisa.
Oh, yeah. It's silly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's dumb.
So, yeah, that was Baskin. Highly enjoyable. I giggled and cackled through most of the film.
Cool.
Like a maniac.
Right on. Hope I get to see that soon. I really want to see that soon.
It's cool.
Fuck, I wish I went to Fantastic Fest.
Yeah, man.
So, I got a few. A documentary called The Amira Profile about this online blog in Damascus about this gay woman who's getting persecuted by her government. Except it might not be real.
Oh.
Yeah.
Huh.
And just the way it kind of, it's like a big giant catfish. Really cool.
Oh, wow.
I really enjoyed that film. It's from a Canadian filmmaker too, from Quebec.
Oh, cool.
Quite enjoyed that one. We already talked about High Rise. It's good.
Right on.
Adrian likes some more.
I do.
This really cool documentary. I don't know if you saw it at South by Southwest, but I know it played, called 808.
I missed it. It was between that and another film. But the other film I watched was really cool.
About the Roland TR-808 drum machine and how every freaking song in existence on the radio has an 808 beat in it.
Cool.
Like, even to the point where Kanye West named one of his albums after it.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Like, it's just, every album has to have that sound. It makes a really unique drum sound. And they only made, 12,000 of them.
Oh, wow.
And the reason they discontinued it is because the reason it has that drum sound is because they use faulty transistors on purpose, and it makes it weird.
Okay.
Yeah. And once they figured they couldn't get any more of those, it got discontinued. Wow. Except for everybody wants one.
Yeah.
So it's really, it was a really interesting documentary.
Cool.
Everybody you think is in this, the Beastie Boys are in this a lot. Which, oh, wow. I know we both love the Beastie
that's
Boys.
That's cool, yeah.
And every one of those Beastie Boys songs, that beat, that's an 808.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's awesome. Love that doc.
Damn.
Yeah. I hope you get to see it soon.
Yeah.
Feature film called Rams about... this really small town in, I think it's Iceland,
okay,
where this epidemic breaks out among the sheep, like a brain virus,
mm-hmm,
and they're ordered to destroy all the sheep because they got to try to clear the virus out.
Okay.
And this one guy just refuses to kill his sheep.
Wow.
And hides them, even though it's going to pretty much destroy the town. And it's just a really interesting and cool little slice of life. Okay. And it snuck up on me really well.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, Rams. This one hurts because I talked a lot of shit about this.
Okay.
The new Adam Egoyan film.
Oh, yeah.
Remember.
Right on.
I talked a lot of shit about this film. I don't like Adam Egoyan film. He hasn't made a good film in 10 years. Well, he has now.
Right on.
This one is Memento-like.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice.
Not quite as good, but yeah, he really sticks this whole entire film. It's beautiful. Cool. You'll be able to see it in a couple weeks.
Right on.
Yeah, remember. And the last one I want to talk about is this really cool mountain climbing documentary called Meru.
Okay.
Everything that Everest should have been. Like, these guys are absolutely nuts. You thought the people in Everest had a bad time? These guys had a real bad time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. The Meru is not like Everest.
Right.
The top of Meru looks like a shark fin.
Okay.
It's this giant peak that just sticks up, and it's really thin. You cannot climb it like a mountain.
Okay.
And nobody's ever climbed it before.
Oh, wow.
To the point where, for the first hour of the film, that's their first attempt. And they fail.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
oh, crazy.
It just gets, everything just gets elevated.
Nice.
It's nuts.
Crazy.
I'm shocked this didn't win the fan award.
Oh, really?
Because people loved this film.
Oh, right on.
It's awesome.
Cool.
Loved it.
Meru.
Wicked. Yeah. Great film.
Cool.
That's it for me.
Right on, dude. Yeah, so that's a lot of films to take in, and we didn't even talk about all of them, right?
No,
there's a lot that I really enjoy.
How many did you see at Fantastic Fest?
32, I believe.
I saw 90 at VIF.
That's awesome.
90 on the dot.
Yeah. I think I was like your target, too, wasn't it?
I was trying for 100, but I had this rule this year where I was like, you know what, man? If my body says stop, I'm going to stop.
Yeah.
I did that a couple times.
That's insane. That's still a huge number. Like, I doubt anybody else comes close to that number, so that's pretty cool.
Oh, they can try.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I think Zach, what did he have, like 50?
Something like that, yeah.
So I thought that was pretty cool to see him post that, because he's always been pretty busy the last few years, like,
yeah,
with work and whatnot.
I think Zach's favorite film was Victoria.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was a really cool film.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed
it. A film that we didn't talk about, but you'll be hearing about that one.
Oh, yeah.
It's a one-take film.
Yeah, one take, one shot.
Yeah.
To get it right.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So did you have fun?
I had a lot of fun, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, can't wait for next year. But health-wise, I'm paying for it now.
I still feel like shit.
Yeah, me too.
I don't feel right recording right now. Like, my brain is still fucked.
Yeah. Yeah, like, the thing is, it's a good thing you mentioned this, because I wanted to talk about it a little bit. When we go to film festivals, we're exposed to the most extreme type of films you could watch. And for us to watch The Club at a film festival, and we expect ourselves to be able to go to more movies after that. It's like, The Club's the kind of film you watch, and then you just fucking take a break from movies for a couple days and just absorb it and just...
Yeah.
But it put me in a dark place.
No,
And then 8 hours later, I was at a movie.
I had a film 20 minutes later.
Yeah. Oh, dude. Yeah, that's crazy.
So I saw Son of Saul, and I went to another venue, and Marina Antunes wanted to record a podcast.
Yeah.
And I said, I can't.
Yeah.
I just can't. Yeah. I'm really fucked up right now.
Yeah.
And it will not be good. Like, I shouldn't be watching a movie right now. Like, yeah. I'm really screwed up right now. That movie really destroyed me.
Yeah.
And I'm really glad we didn't, because I wouldn't want to listen to it. I was done.
Yeah, I bet.
I watched another film right after it.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't even tell you what the film is.
Yeah. It's hard to get your mind right after seeing something that just wrecks you.
Yeah.
And, you know, even a movie like Baskin... I saw it at the end of the night, and I'm glad I saw it at the end of the night, because I don't know if I could have seen another movie after that. It was just so crazy and hardcore. My mind was just in another place.
You were basking in the glory of Fantastic Fest. Oh,
exactly.
What?
Nice zinger, dude.
That was terrible. I apologize.
Yeah, but it's crazy to watch all of these hardcore movies that push the limits of cinema, and then you're like, okay, 30 minutes later, I get to do it again.
Well, like, how long have you been off from festing? Like, over a week?
Yeah, that's right.
And you still feel like shit.
Yeah.
I've been, like 4 days?
Yeah.
3 days?
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
I feel like shit.
Yeah.
My brain is an absolute mush. Mm-hmm. Like, trying to say my top 10, it's like, fuck, I'm useless right now.
Yeah. Yeah, and even catching up to the real-life movies, I felt pretty beat up. Like, I watched Sicario. That was the last film I watched. We were going to record last night, but ahead of time I texted you. I was like, dude, I don't know if I'm feeling it today. Let's do it tomorrow. Sicario just annihilated me. And we'll talk about it in the next episode. But yeah, to watch these crazy movies, it's kind of baffling to me that we watch all of these at once and walk through it and we're like scarred. But so much fun.
It's not for the weak, man.
No, definitely not. No,
it's definitely not.
I spoke with somebody on Twitter who said she couldn't handle the violence in The Lobster. And I was like,
what?
Whoa, what? Are you kidding me? But I guess...
The violence?
Yeah.
I'm desensitized.
Well, remember somebody dies.
And, yeah, but that's...
And an animal dies.
That's not... Come on.
Yeah, I know, right? But just...
She was at Fantastic Fest.
Oh, no, it wasn't Fantastic Fest.
Oh, okay. Okay. She was a VIF.
Exactly. So, yeah, to the regular person, a lot of these films are just unbearable.
Wow.
That's crazy.
My God.
Yeah, that was my reaction as well.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's us. That's festival season. We love every second of it. Love and hate.
I just wish I could take a month off.
Oh, totally. If I could take, like, an extra week just to chill out, that would be great, but we can't. Oh, and I also left out the part where I had to stay overnight at the San Francisco airport.
Jesus.
I received an email the morning I left, which was, it was still like 10 hours away from my flight. They're like, yeah, this flight's delayed. It's like, fuck. Then I received another email saying the flight's more delayed. So I caught my first flight. Caught a connector in San Francisco, and I had 20 minutes between, no, 15, 20 minutes between landing. Like, when we landed, I turned on my phone. I was like, man, my plane leaves in 20 minutes. So when the wheels hit the ground, it took me about 10 minutes from wheels hitting the ground to walking to my gate, which is still quite a hike. I was going as fast as I possibly could, and I missed my flight by mere moments. I was like, went there, it was all closed off. I could see last call, Vancouver. And the guy, there was a guy there, not for United, but just some dude. He was like, they literally just closed the doors just now. I was like, fuck. And so, I guess once they close them, they can't open them, so...
Still.
Yeah. And United was like, oh, LOL noob, you're going to have to spend $200 on a hotel or just stay here for 9 hours. So I tried to sleep at the airport for about 9 hours and it was brutal.
Yeah, I died. I couldn't do that.
It sucked.
Why would you? Yeah. We were in the airport for maybe 3 hours last year.
Yeah.
And it was hell.
That was brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, you could go through my Twitter or my Instagram feed. I took a bunch of pictures.
Dude, I was reading it from Vancouver, and I was freaking out. I'm like, what the fuck's going on?
Yeah. So.
Felt so bad for you.
Yeah. I survived.
The cool thing is that, like, everybody on your Twitter account, like, rallied around you.
Yeah, it was nice. It was really cool. A lot of people sent me a bunch of messages that really uplifted me, so... That was probably what kept me from going crazy. It was just the amount of people who were like, dude, sorry to hear that, or sharing their own stories. And so, yeah.
Sounded like hell, man.
It was. And I think that's what got me sick, because I felt fine until that day.
Yeah, I got sick maybe 3 or 4 days before the festival ended. But man. I felt better by the end.
Yeah.
But I still feel like shit.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. I don't recommend this to anybody. I really don't.
Yeah.
you got to be a special kind of weirdo to do film festivals.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Cool.
I think that's it.
Yeah, I think so. I think that about covers it. I guess we can tell people where they can find us online. So you're on Twitter, right?
Yeah, at SoundJam69.
We have a show Twitter account. It's @thegreen_screen. And you can find me on @Adrian_Charlie. We also have a Facebook account. You can look us up, The Green Screen of Death. And we're also on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio. Hit subscribe, leave a comment, rate us. That'd be cool. Helps us find a wider audience. So yeah, anything else to add before we close this festival episode?
Happy you're back, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Happy to have the band back together. Right on. Cool. Well, until next time, thanks for listening, everybody.
Peace.